6, and joining us on set right now is Bills center Connor McGovern, and officially known as that now, with a year under your belt, at least with the Bills anyway. So is it like old hat at this point? It's like, hey, let's go.
It feels good. Chemistry's going well. Me and Josh are very comfortable with each other. It's just that extra year, and then not just me and Josh, the same, all five guys up front. So it's a great feeling. It's the first time ever in my career like that.
Everybody had a question mark. And the whole team was supposed to take a step back, and you were part of the issue. You know, we got a new guy moving down to center. Who knows how that's going to go? Yeah, well, you go to the Pro Bowl, you go to the AFC Championship game. The entire team really answered every question. It's got to feel good coming back to training camp, looking around and thinking, all right, let's shift gears.
Yeah, for sure. Like, especially like you just said, last year there's so many question marks, and I think we answered every single one of them.
Right.
Everyone just bought into that belief system. Everyone eats that Joe Brady brought, and I just feel we're very comfortable with each other. Everyone knows each other. The chemistry's great, and then this year just able to take another step, I feel like.
Yeah. What are you guys doing? Because the big guys feel the heat more than anybody.
Fair.
I was joking the other day, oh, it's another powder in your shorts day, and you literally put powder in your shorts, just like I do, just like I do. But what do you guys do? Obviously, you got to force fluids and hydrate beforehand.
Yep.
But what are you kind of doing during practice when it's not your rep set?
Yeah, constantly drinking fluids. Like I'm a big sweater, so constant salt, not just water, not just Gatorade, like getting those salts, everything into your electrolytes. We're losing upwards of 10, 12 pounds
of water. Yeah,
yeah. Right. So you're constantly drinking. As soon as you're out, put an ice towel on your head, just trying to cool that core temperature down. Right off the field, you're jumping in the cold tub, fully submerged. You get a slushy in your hand. I know we're kind of soft nowadays with all that stuff, but
smarter. Yeah. It's not soft.
Don't get me started.
It's not soft.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's not soft. It's smarter. It's smarter.
It's the
smarter
biggest thing is just getting your core temperature down as fast as you can.
Yeah. And what? Give us an idea of the schedule. Like today, you guys got to go in. You're going to watch practice film. You're going to do that. How late does it go? I know that. You don't have an afternoon practice to get ready for.
Yeah.
You can kind of jam it in today and get
– Yeah, so like today, well, first thing you want to go recover. Some guys work out, get in the ice tubs, go get food. That's very important right now. Then we're in meetings at like 1:30 or so for about 2 hours. Then we meet as an offense, go over the day, get a little break, get snack, go walk around, flush the legs, come back for about another hour. Then around 6 o'clock we have a walkthrough, and that's another one. It's still hot out then, so you got to make sure you're drinking again. And then you're done for the day around 7.
Right.
How, because you've largely had the same top 8 or 9 guys the last couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
How does Cromes keep, and Coach Gund keep everything fresh in the practice setting? I mean, I know there you can never have too many reps and you can never rep technique enough, but Coach Cromes and Coach Gund, like, they got to kind of keep it fresh, too, to keep you guys engaged, right?
I mean, you got to keep everyone on their toes. Like, the five of us up front, like the starters, know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that really allows us to help the next guys up. So we've been very lucky the past few years, very few injuries.
Yep.
Knock on that. Very
we'll
few
all do it.
Missed. Yeah, I think Spencer was the only one that missed the game last year. So make sure guys like Ryan Vandermark, Sed, Grable, like all those guys are ready. Like if something happens, that they're the next guys up. And we're also helping Chrome Austin just make sure they're ready. They're good because – we're as good as they are. If we're not out, they're up.
Right.
We got to make sure there's no missteps. So that's our big thing right now, making sure they're ready to go.
What's the next step for the offense after the year you had last year?
more points than anybody.
Score more points than the defense.
Yeah.
They're defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really it. You guys, you set a franchise record for points. You average 30 points a game. You were top 2 for the year in average scoring per game. What is the – you know, what is the apple out there that keeps you guys hungry and keeps going?
Just the way it ended last year. We were so close, but at the same time so far away. And then you had that next goal to win that big game and then to get to the final dance.
Yeah.
That's what's really driving us this year.
I want to talk to you about a couple of the young guys
through
camp here in your group. Tylan Grable, as we know, came in last year as a rookie, wins the swing tackle job, which – that's not nothing, especially when you have a guy the caliber of Ryan Vandermark here as well. And then he gets the core muscle injury, and his rookie year kind of goes up in smoke. How has he kind of re-entered the fray here in year two, and how do you feel he's matured, I guess, in year two?
He's done a great job. Like, last year, really couldn't do too much. I think it was week 3 that he got had the injury. So he worked back towards the end of the year, taking reps again. So it was basically he had to restart all over again, like – ground zero. and just the way he listens to Deion, Vandy too, and Spencer, like, to see how they think, and he takes that out to the field. The other day he had a couple of bad sets. Listen to Deion, what he was saying, and come out the next day, and it's totally fixed. He looks like a brand, like, back
to
himself.
So he can apply instruction.
Yeah, and, like, he's doing a great job listening right. And then applying it back to the field, and that's what I really respect
about
him.
And then real quick, one other guy that Steve and I were watching in one-on-ones who seems to be holding his own here, and he's getting more reps because Sed is down, Jacob Bayer.
Yes.
Like, that guy can take on bigger bodies and hold, like, his anchor is really good.
He reminds me, you like this, he reminds me a lot of, like, a smaller, compact Mitch Morse.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, because, like, he's got that swatty body.
Yeah, he's not 6'6".
No, he's not 6'6". It's just, like, a smaller, compact version of him. And he's able to get himself in position. He doesn't get out of position. And it's just hard to move him because how small and compact he is.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you this now. Nobody knows better than you guys. Give us a little synopsis about how the D-line has changed.
They're doing very well. I like the style they're playing. Like, Ed Oliver every day is switching up something new. And, like, so we have to react to him. And then as we're reacting to him, he's changing what we're doing. So we're constantly communicating. Just the way the defense is attacking the ball this year, how when we're pulling, they're either closing down hard or they're spilling it. So we got to react differently. They're not just doing it one way every single time. The backers are flying all over the place. I just love how, like, the intensity every day the defense is bringing.
We were talking to TB one of the first days of practice while he was still out there before his hamstring injury, and I was asking him, like, is it me or does it look like there's even more motion pre-snap than we saw from the offense last year? He goes, yeah. He goes, but that's good for us because it helps us prepare. Yeah. Do you feel like there's even more pre-snap motion in the offense this year than last year?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, we did a great job disguising a lot of stuff this year, and then we're just more comfortable with each other, so we're able to do more this year, and just we're throwing everything in. Like,
yeah.
Going into the game,
it's busy pre-snap.
Yeah, we might not have this much during the game, but right now you're just trying to learn the
whole
playbook.
Yeah,
so you're throwing everything at them, and they're doing a great job reacting to it. And I love going against, like, especially our linebackers, because no one really else flies the ball like they do. Like, TB, Matt, like, there's not many athletic linebackers that could just run the length of the field. And so that really makes us have to react to that. And then we get to the game, and it feels like it's going in slow motion.
All right, both sides of the ball, offense, defense, special teams, coaching staff. Who's impressed you this camp?
Easily, without a doubt, Jackson Haas.
Oh,
rookie,
yeah.
The phenomenal block, how he's finishing. It looks like he's been here for 3 or 4 years. The way you should have saw it yesterday.
Smart guy, man. Smart, Ivy League guy.
Smart. Yesterday we had a duo. He's working with Deion. Comes down on a tram. Knocks Greg Rousseau like it was. Like, a little kid knocks him down, gets up, wheels out Matt Milano, like nothing, ball goes right up the hash. It was insane to see. Like,
for a rookie to be doing that, that's what you mean, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of awareness.
Because I was like, oh, is Dawson's back? Like, this, and I look, and I was like, oh, no.
Oh, it's 85.
I was like, yeah. I was like, and then we're all excited. And we made sure. Then he thought we were joking with him yesterday. We're like, oh, like, great job. He's like, oh, it's just a bad joke. We're like, no, like, seriously, like, not a lot of tight ends do that. Like, and his willingness to just go in there and just do the dirty work.
And if he proves himself capable as we move into the preseason here, how much freedom and versatility does that give Joe Brady? Because now, if you want to go big, you can go Alec, can be, you know, your jumbo guy that you've used the last year plus, or you can go 13 with him, Dawson, and Dalton, or you can go crazy and
bring,
you know,
them both in.
That's what I mean. So, like, maybe just speak to the versatility and options that gives your offense if he can prove, hey, I'm your third tight end, I'm here to do the dirty work.
He could do that. That just keeps the defense on their toes. They don't know what to expect because now they know last year, like, by the end of the year, they knew Alex coming, all right, we're only running duo, we're only running outside, like, very few plays. It was hard for them to stop, but they knew it was coming. Now if we got Jackson into that, who knows? Like, are we going to throw it? Are we going to run it? Who knows? And I think it just really opens up. Then it gives Josh even more freedom.
If you parachuted into this camp from last year's camp, what would you notice would be different?
I would say definitely right off the bat, the communication. Yeah. Just long ball, all 11 of us talking. You'll see me constantly turn around talking to Josh. Last year there was kind of just getting used to each other, how we all figure out. Me at center, the tight ends, like, listening to everything. But now we're just all very comfortable. We're not afraid to tell Josh no if he wants to change something, or just constantly talking. And just simple stuff like that, that doesn't seem like a big issue off the field, but while you're out there, that's a huge thing.
One difference is last year you had a brand new center nobody knew about. Now you got a Pro Bowl center.
Hey. Yeah, it's true.
There you go.
Yeah, congrats, by the way.
Appreciate that.
Because we didn't see you when that happened. Last one from me. How much has the pizza making repertoire expanded.
Yeah. I had a feeling.
I want to know how far. No, seriously. Yeah, well, I mean, he's a foodie. I'm a foodie. I got my own uni oven for the backyard.
Get rid of the uni.
Really? Is something better? I mean, I won it at Ewood's charity fundraiser, so I just started using it.
I'm not a person. So, like, well, it depends how many pizzas you make in these.
Yeah, like, I'm not making a ton. And those ovens are small.
They are.
Like,
yeah, that's my problem. Like, I want, like, a large New York
style. You can't go more than, like, 8 inches in diameter in that thing.
Yeah. Personally, like, the uni, I thought it was great. If you're making 1-2 pizzas, great.
Yeah.
I'm making upwards 30 to 40.
Yeah.
Like, after three
with
or four,
big appetite, guys.
Yeah. After 30, 40 pizzas, like, like just three of them, you got to reheat it. It takes a while.
Yeah.
So I actually have steel plates built into my oven back home. So I crank
out.
So it's almost like a true New York oven.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm cranking out two at a time.
I'm not making your money. So, because if I could, I would just build a brick oven
in my
backyard.
That's what I'm doing. That's
But I worry about the temperature here, like cracking my brick oven, with the winters we have.
Get a steel plate. They don't crack. So that was my first, when I first had like ceramic tile.
All right, I got to talk to you about that more off air.
Get steel plates and it's good to go.
Do you have a wooden peel or a metal peel?
Wooden peel. I like the wooden peel better.
Okay. All right. But are you experimenting in terms of like recipe stuff? I'm wondering how far you're pushing the envelope
pizza,
here.
But my wife says I have to get better hobbies. a lot of it is cooking and baking wise. She's like, you're making me gain weight. So, like, when we get back, I'll have to get you straight. So, I got into baking this offseason.
Tell her.
So, I've started to make cookies, like chocolate chip cookies, peanut butter cookies. Next time when we're break for camp here, I'll bring some.
Yeah. I'm down on that. Steve, yesterday scarfed down like 4 Wegmans cookies because they're bringing us lunch every day.
Like, the Wegmans cookies are like that small, little thin. These are like big, thick cookies.
It's an old lineman cookie.
Here's a marriage trick. Go tell your wife to take up a new hobby and start exercising. Just see how that works.
Good luck. You want to tell her that? Yeah.
Yeah, don't do that. He's smart enough to know not to do that. All right, Connor, thanks for the time as always. All right. Stay healthy, please.
Will do.
And keep hydrating. That's Connor McGovern joining us here on One Bills Live. We'll take a break. Be back with more. Stay tuned for our training camp coverage. By Bills safety, Cole Bishop. All right, Cole, you decided or made the decision at some point that you were going to spend the bulk of your offseason in Buffalo. Welcome to a long winter, which you experienced. This is not Peachtree, Georgia, as you know. So maybe just lay out the reasons for that decision and what you hope to accomplish by saying, I'm staying in Buffalo for almost the duration of the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, it was for an assortment of reasons. I mean, this summer, I tweaked my groin a little bit towards the end, so that was a big part of it. And then, obviously, working with Taylor Rapp was a big thing, trying to get our chemistry dialed in. We saw you guys pretty much every morning. So we were just always trying to work together and, get on the same page.
So this is your second training camp. Mm-hmm. Everything kind of feels different.
For sure.
And this one, you've got 19 NFL games under your belt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of game. Yep. It feels like a third season in college, right?
For sure.
How different does it feel, and what do you notice most?
Yeah, a lot more comfortable. Obviously, on the field, even off the field, like in the meeting rooms and everything, super confident in the playbook. On the field, being comfortable. The more reps you get, the more freely you can play. Being able to just fly around and not thinking as much. I mean, today's the first day of pads, but felt a lot better than my first day of pads last year.
Yeah, right.
What did you pull from your film last year? Because I imagine there was time to do that in the offseason as well. What did you pull from it to personally improve and say, I'm going to fix that, or here's my answer to that, here's my solution for that, so when I'm on the field year two, those things don't crop up?
For sure. I mean, a big emphasis in our defense is taking the ball away. I didn't have any interceptions last year, so.
You were close on a couple, though.
Yeah. But got to make them.
Right.
That's got to be the difference this year. So definitely taking the ball away and then just open field tackling. That's a part of the safety's job. It's one of the hardest things to do in football, but that's what we have to do. So being able to just always make sure we get the guy on the ground. So really just those are the two main things.
That's like the controlled aggression part that you kind of have to have, right? I mean, nothing feels better than, crunching somebody.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's more important, obviously, to make the tackle than to get a lights-out hit. So how do you kind of battle that inside you, because you have to play with a certain amount of intensity to be successful in this league, but at the same time you don't want to be out of control where you're missing the chance to make a play.
I would just say there's like a time and a place. You know, if they see you and you see them, obviously, it's going to have to be more under control and make sure that when they're going to make a move, trying to juke you or something like that, you're under control to make that tackle. And then if they don't see you coming and they're not ready for it, that's when you can really be more aggressive.
Gotcha.
So just kind of knowing when to do what.
What was some of the feedback you got in your exit interview when you're about ready to leave? You had your first year under your belt, season's over. What was some of the feedback they gave you? Say, hey, we'd love to see you do this, love to see you do that. What did they see in you and that helped you in this offseason and give you some direction?
Like more after the season last year was just making sure I'm communicating well, being able to run the defense on the back end. And then just kind of the other two things I said, being able to take the ball away, open field tackles. Trying to dial in my man coverage, so really just those things.
Right. And then with respect to that communication on the field, because it's really you, T-Rap, TB, and Taryn, like you four guys kind of run the show. I'm guessing TB kind of takes the lead on that because he's setting the defense off the break of the huddle. And then maybe just give me the path of the communication from there. Does it go in a specific order where, like, all right, we hear from T-Rap, then it's my turn to chime in? Like, how does that communication materialize pre-snap?
Yeah, a lot of the times me and Rap will be saying the same things, just our respective sides. Obviously, there's different situations for everything, but obviously TB gets a call on the headset, gives it to us, and then, you know, we kind of handle more of the coverage end and what's going on in the secondary and in the back seven, and then he's set in the front and everything like that.
Gotcha.
New faces in the room. You know, Max Tredavious is back. You didn't know Tredavious. He's new to you. How's that group, the entire room, getting together? A lot of guys in there. Good atmosphere.
Yeah,
at least coming together.
For sure. I'd say we got a close-knit group so far. I mean, obviously, we're just going to keep getting closer as the training camp goes on and the season goes on. But all these young guys look great. I mean, I'm young, obviously, but I mean, the rookies and everything look great.
Right.
Everybody's meshing well together. Tredavious looks great. I mean, he's making plays every day. So it's awesome having all these new guys.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of youth, to your point, on your side of the ball. I mean, you think about, as you're watching the draft, I don't know if you watched it live, but five of the first six picks are on defense. How did that grab you? You're like, oh, okay, we're going to have some horses here. Like, how are you watching that unfold, seeing the emphasis there was on the defensive side of the ball here by Brandon Bean?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was, like, you know, dialed in on the TV or anything
that,
but obviously you see it on social media and everything. But it's good to see. I mean, we got a lot of guys where we needed them. They look like great players. Like I said, I mean, today's the first day of pads, so I haven't seen the film, but up until now they've been making plays, so I'm excited to see what they're going to do.
Yeah.
What about Max Harrison? He comes in as a corner, plays. You know, you're going to be right there with him. You've seen him. Brownie and I have watched. He's an athlete. I mean, he's fast. Got smooth hips. You know, he's backpedaling. His head's not moving. I mean, he's just as smooth.
His transition's
online.
Crazy.
Give us a little bit of how that factors into the way you guys work back there. He's obviously. I saw Tredavious dapping him up, and Tredavious is almost like an old hen.
Yep.
Hanging around Max, you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of that going on, right?
Obviously, I'm sure he's trying to be a great mentor for him while also competing. But like you said, he's a great athlete. I'd say that it's more on, the play caller with Bobby,
right.
Depending on what he wants to do with, if you have a guy that he thinks is more athletic in certain situations. But for us, we're still going to make our same calls and just making sure everybody's on the same page.
Right. And then Coach was saying today, because people are asking him about first day in pads, this, that, and the other, what do you want? And he said this more than once already in less than a full week of training camp. He says, I want a nasty defense with an attitude. Nobody's playing dirty out there, but hard-hitting, intense defense, so the offense feels you.
For sure.
How do you kind of put that into practice in a training camp setting where you can't be all the way, you can't have the dial turned all the way up, but how do you utilize practice here to have that when you get to game day? Like, how do you ramp up to that in the practice set?
For sure. Kind of earlier, like I was saying, like a controlled aggression, like there's times when, for example, I'm taking on a block, I can go as physical as possible, but if the running back doesn't see you, don't hit him as hard as you can and knock him over.
Right.
So, or if you guys both see each other, you can have a collision, but obviously, you're trying to keep everybody healthy and everything, so that's different. But taking on blocks, so really just inside the box, I'd say, is where you can be mostly physical.
Gotcha.
We had Terrell Bernard on earlier in camp, and I asked him this, and I'll ask you, what's different about Bobby Babich this year?
Well, I'd say I don't make as many as much mistakes as I was last year.
So he's not as loud in your ear.
Our relationship's growing.
Your relationship's better.
Not as loud in your ear.
Yep. But I think I'm sure he's feeling more comfortable. I mean, I can't speak for him, but his second year, I imagine he's feeling more comfortable out there calling the plays and everything. So I'd say that.
Yeah. I remember when we were talking to you last year, and last spring, so spring 24, we were asking you, how different is this defense compared to what you did in college? And you said it's completely different.
Yes.
So that transition, not to mention the fact that, if I remember right, you played close to the line of scrimmage a lot in college too, a lot of man coverage calls, is that right? Okay, so I just wanted to make sure my memory's good. So what have you taken from this first year in this system to give you the comfort level? Is it just seeing it from that angle time and time and time again? Because you're further away from the line of scrimmage now than maybe you've ever been before on a regular basis, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. More like my first 2 years of college, I was pretty much strictly strong safety. Then my last year, we kind of just played left and right. So it was kind of 50-50.
Interchangeable.
I'd really just say with the reps, it's easy to be in the classroom, and if they're asking you questions, answer them quick and everything like that. But then once it's going full speed, and I mean, even in a walkthrough, it's just different seeing it in person on the field.
Right.
So just being able to accumulate more and more reps, I just feel a lot more comfortable.
Just like with angles of entry and all of that stuff.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. What's been the message so far from the defensive staff? You guys go back, you go and you're evaluating every practice. I mean, every rep gets scrutinized.
Yep.
How's that been going in the meetings? What are the coaches saying about how this defense is coming together with all the new faces, moving parts? The young guys, so many young guys who are looking to be contributors.
Yeah, I'd say, obviously we still have a lot to work on, but I think we've been looking good. Coaches, you know how it is. Coaches are always going to keep trying to correct you. Even if we had a great day, they're still going to find things to make it even better. But, you know, McDermott's been preaching on the nasty aspect of it, so really just trying to be physical and just take the ball away. Those are our two main focuses, I would say.
Last one for me, Cole. Last year, I don't have to tell you, getting off the field on third down was a problem. Your takeaway ability as a team kind of bailed you out a lot through the course of the year, but I know you guys want to make that number better. Just based on what you reviewed from last season, was it more a byproduct of what did not happen on first and second down that made third down so tough? What were your assessments of what kind of handicapped you guys in getting off the field on third down last year so you can make it better this year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the coaches will be better off answering that than me. I'm obviously more focused on the back end of things, but I think a big part of it is just rush and coverage working together. I'm sure Bobby has said that to you guys.
Yep.
So if the rush is getting there, but we aren't covering enough on the back end, then they can't get a sack. And then if we're covering long enough and then they're not getting there, then you can't cover forever. So just making sure we're working together and just both having success.
Yeah, marrying that together. Yep. I got you.
Colts, good talking to you, man. Stay in one piece, would you?
You're
one of the few who do. I mean, it's been a long list here.
That's the goal.
Knock on wood.
Appreciate the time, as always.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, stay healthy. All right, good luck this season. That's Cole Bishop joining us here on One Bills Live. We'll take a break and be back with more of our coverage here at training camp. Stay tuned.
He has been somebody that I've been leaning on tremendously. Just his mental game and taking care of himself mentally is at such a high level that that's been something that I've worked on for a while now. So just asking him questions on how he stays strong mentally. And, you know, this game is 99% mental, you know, so you got to have that right in order to go out there and perform physically. So I've been leaning on him heavy, and obviously he's a baller as well. And same with Palm, bigger dude, baller as well, physical when he plays, great dude all around. So that whole receive room every single year is just great dudes gelling together to go out there and make plays for each other.
That is Khalil Shakir. Meanwhile, real quick, checking the old Venmo account right here.
I got to get a number.
I have not seen the clip, but I've been alerted that in speaking with Matt Parrino, Brandon Bean did use the phrase wide receiver train.
Which means
I win a bet.
You do.
Maybe I'll just give him the 20.
You kind of influenced. Well, not really.
How so? I just said he would say it.
Give me a number. I don't know what number's on that bet board.
It's either 20 or 25.
The whiteboard I'm looking at right now says $10.
Oh,
get out.
$10. I'm not there. You know I didn't.
Or actually,
it was 10.
The way it's written says Jeremy White, yes, 25. Joe, 10. It doesn't have anything written 25. Next to Joe. Yeah. So I'm assuming 25.
I got it at plus $250. That's what happened.
That's 25.
Let's go. Thank you.
See, this is the key to Jeremy winning these bets is he doesn't put a timestamp on them. They just live forever until he finally says it. 10 years from now, I could have been owing him $25. It would have still been up there.
That's true. That is true.
All right, there you go.
Here's the check clear
now.
Anyway, he spoke with Matt Parrino about the whole thing. I've only been told about it. I've go and check it for sure. You know, Matt had a conversation with him, so we'll dig into it. All right, so. Back here at training camp, it is going to be a full pads day. So that's what we've been told. Full pads day, which is, people like that kind of thing.
More contact.
The pads popping.
Yeah. Just stay healthy, right? Everybody stay healthy. Pete Prisco from CBS was doing his tour around the – he's coming here at some point.
He is.
He's doing his tour around different training camps. Was at Miami yesterday, and while at Dolphins camp, went on national television and said that he believes that the Dolphins are the worst team in the AFC East.
And he was escorted out.
Is that is that crazy?
No, that's not crazy.
The Jets are – they're the Jets, right? The Dolphins have – do you know the last time the Dolphins have had – a season where they've won fewer than 8 games. It's been a while.
They're like the low key Steelers.
They're kind of low key like the Steelers. So the Dolphins win totals by year going backwards 8, 11, 9, 9, 10. 5 years in a row. And then before that you get to that first Brian Flores year, but that's 6 years ago now where they're down at the bottom. And I kind of want to believe that they could finish last too. I'm just wondering if this is one of those where everybody is saying it, everybody seems to be on the same page, and we've gone a little bit too far with it. That they have to be bad this year. They still have Tua. They still have good weapons. I think I'm seeing a lot on how bad their defensive personnel is. We're secondary in the league. They just signed a corner this weekend who might start for them immediately. They almost signed Rasul Douglas to do the same thing. So I don't know. Part of me wants to think, no, they're going to be bad. Another part wants to say, no, this is all – it's gone a little too far. They're still going to be, an 8-9 win team that's on the bubble come December.
Well, one thing working to their advantage – and again, like, I know you play who you play, but when you lay it all out, one of the things – who's the team we did this with? The Giants. You're like, well, maybe the Giants can be scrappy with a good pass rush and Russell Wilson. And then you look at their schedule and they can start 0-10.
It's murderous row.
Flip side. Here's the Dolphins. What could the Dolphins do? Opener, Colts.
Very winnable.
Patriots.
Easily winnable.
Patriots.
Winnable.
Bills.
Not winnable.
Jets.
Not for them.
Jets.
Yeah, winnable.
Panthers.
They're favored in most of those games.
Right.
Panthers. Winnable.
That's 4-1. Maybe not 4-1. After that, it's the Chargers.
3-2 at worst. 3-2 feels like they should at least be 3-2.
Okay.
4-1 feels more likely to me than 2-3 is.
Chargers at home. This is a battle of teams you don't believe in.
Yeah, I know. I would think the Chargers beat them, though.
After that, though, it's the Browns and the Falcons.
Both winnable. Browns more so, but
like
yeah.
They could get to the halfway point of the season, and then it picks up. From there, the Dolphins go Ravens, Bills, Commanders, Saints, Jets, Steelers, right. Bengals, Bucks, Patriots.
Right.
The second half of Miami's schedule, they could easily be 6-3 and finish 7-9.
Yep.
7-10, whatever it is.
And then the other problem, of course, is, and this is, this is known about them now, but their whole thing hinges on the most injury-prone quarterback in the league staying healthy. And I don't know. I'm reading a lot about how bad their offensive line might be this year, and that seems like a problem because you got an offense that is so tailored to the quarterback that it kind of seems like it's too complicated for any backup to come in and execute it, and your line's not good, and the guy had – like, your whole offense has to be run within 2 seconds. Why does Jonnu Smith lead them in catches last year? Because the ball's got to come out so fast because they're so afraid to just have Tua stand back there in the pocket. There's so many things that Joe Brady and the Bills can do. There's so many things that all these other top offenses in the league can do that I just feel like Mike McDaniel can't even consider them because he cannot risk the guy going down. And it's happened every year of his career going back to college except for one.
I'm trying to find the right comparison here. I don't know who to look for. Tua, in games that Tua plays, starts.
Yeah.
The record for Miami, they've never been under 500.
It's good.
He's 38-24 in games he started.
Okay.
So.
That's very good.
Who's the right quarterback to check on that? Like, is that better than Justin Herbert? It's not going to be as good
the
as.
The record's going to be better.
Yeah, right? You're
definitely,
right.
Definitely going to be better.
And I know it's not all QB wins. I get that. But the point is, right, you mentioned he's an injury-prone quarterback. He's 2 years ago, he played every game. He made it through the whole season. They went 11-6. Last year, he missed six games. They went 6-5 when he played. So
Herbert's record, 41-38.
Yeah, three games over 500, where Tua is, what, 14 games over?
Yep.
And I know QB wins, not all, just that.
No, that's right.
But when he plays, they win a lot.
And you have to count, though, that games played by year, 10, 13, 13, 17, 11. Like, almost every
one
like,
full season.
You've got a plan almost that he's going to miss four games.
Yeah.
Like, more likely than not, he's going to miss four games, if not more. And, again, the evidence there has been it sounds like it's because of the design of the offense and how complicated it is, or I don't know what it is, but that when he goes out, you are not seeing backups come in and be able to execute it at all, no matter who they've put in. And that's a problem, because if you've got to have your backup play four games a year, then you need someone to get you two wins out of that, and they haven't had that.
See Joe Brady walking over right here. Bills offensive coordinator will pop down with us. We'll chat for a few minutes before today's appears to be fully padded practice. So, you know, that changes the game a little bit. Coverage of training camp here from St. John Fisher is brought to you by Fiegel, Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. Joe Brady, Bills offensive coordinator, joining us. Good morning.
Good morning. What's going on, guys?
We're you know, hanging out. It's a nice day. It's going to be a hot one again. How are you?
I'm great. I'm fantastic. First day in pads, baby. Here
yeah,
we go.
All right. All right. Yeah. Confirmed. Yeah. Finally confirmed. We'd heard it a couple different places, first day in pads. So.
There you go. That's what I break the news.
Yeah. So what does that mean for you? Like, you say good day to do that?
Yeah, it's football. You know, like, look, at the end of the day, I know this. Don't get me wrong. OTAs, the first four practices are extremely important and everything, but, like, football's played with your hands and the pads and – you learn a lot about guys, right? Like the physicality, the way they play. Can they still play with technique? So once these start going, that's when you get to see a lot.
I was going to ask if it's more exciting for the offensive guys or the defensive guys, but I feel like you seem pretty excited about it. So who's more excited?
Yeah. I mean, I like to think that if you're a football player, you wake up today knowing that her pads are on, you get to finally play some football. But, look, it's pretty tough running the football when, you know, you're just in helmets, right? And so – you just really kind of just promote the technique and everything. But right now you get to see the level of physicality, and now it's kind of real football. And so, you know, you always see that first day, like, are guys antsed up? What's the energy like? Should be good, but now it's about can guys play under control now that the pads are on and the anxiety and the stress are kind of rolling.
Yeah, and around the league, I think I saw Atlanta had a padded practice. They had a bunch of fights. Like, this time in camp, most teams kind of wait a couple practices in. So around the league, maybe, you know, tempers flare in this scenario.
Yeah, and I'm sure you always know the type of guys and who's usually the ones that are probably going to start it or whatnot. But, yeah, it's football, and, you know, tempers get going. There's that level of physicality. You'd rather toe the line than get guys to go as opposed to having to hold them back, and then tell them to get going. So I'm excited for today.
Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady joining us. Before we get to the what's going on right now, what does your offseason look like? What do you do when you step away? How much time do you take away, and what are you doing with your time?
Yeah, usually you don't really get away after the season. You know, you finally get to kind of meet my wife again, meet my son again. You kind of go into hibernation for the whole season. But, fortunately in the NFL, like, we don't have that off season. We just kind of get going and get ready for the next season. So, but this past month, I always try to kind of clear my brain. And so my wife and my son, we went down to the beach in Florida and, just to kind of relax, get some mind right and come back. But outside of that, you're kind of nonstop football all the way through.
Is it just lay on the beach, read a book, play golf? Like, what is it for you?
Yeah, no, it's literally chase my 2.5-year-old around. So try to get my wife some help. And look, I'm as pale as it gets. So me and the son aren't really, you know, great friends. But look, I had a lot of fun just kind of change the scenery, just switching it up, and, you know, kind of get that antsy when you get on that flight back home. You land in Buffalo, you know it's ready to go.
When you look back at last year, do you think about full picture? Do you think about all the success? Do you think about what might have been different? Like, when you look back and think about it, how do you view it?
Look, I think there's a bunch of different ways you can kind of view it. You can sit there. You can look at all the success, all the you know, how our guys played well, the ways that, you know, some guys came in and how they were able to adapt in the offense and kind of fit. You can look at, you know, when plays didn't work, or you know, opportunities that we have that it didn't. And so it's a, I think the biggest thing is when we go through our season and we look back at the season, we don't just focus on the good or only focus on the bad, because I think then you lose sight of the big picture. You know, there were sometimes where some really good plays but happened that the scheme might have been terrible, and, you know, we just have a free quarterback, or there might have been some plays that might not have went well and the execution wasn't good enough. But if I got in that situation again, would I call the same play? And so really just take an opportunity to just kind of dive in and just kind of look at everything in a whole. And one thing I can tell you, we obviously have to get better, right? And so you know, we're starting all over right now, having to go earn it, and hopefully we're better this year than we were last.
Is that reflection any different for you compared to maybe this time last year? You were the interim coordinator before that. It wasn't the whole season, versus you get a whole year to look at how it went. So is that any different for you personally?
Well, I think you get you know, I think the biggest difference was the opportunity of what the beginning of last offseason looked like compared to the beginning of this offseason. You're kind of focusing on this offseason as you still have an opportunity to look back. Hey, what can we change? What are we going to do differently? We have a lot of guys back compared to last season, you know, in terms of understanding kind of the vision for how some of these guys are already utilizing their skill sets and trying to put together, where last year there was a lot of receivers, offensive line, you know, new running backs. Like, it was just putting it all together. This year we kind of have a better feel of who some of the guys are, and now how can we expand on it, or some of the new pieces kind of put them into it.
Yeah, the continuity point, like, there's a couple new receivers in. How unique is that for your career, college and pro, to have, like, all the linemen seem to be the same, the quarterback room? Like, it feels like a huge portion of that offensive roster is the same people.
Yeah, I think, look, anytime you can have continuity, especially if, you know, the people that you had back worked together well, there was, you know, they enjoy being around each other and they understand how each other kind of plays, especially at the offense line and the quarterback position, right? Like, that's the two most important, right? Or, you know, skills. And so I think that's huge for the guys. But at the same time, sometimes we can have the tendency of, like, hey, the guys are back, so we know we're good at this, or hey, the guys are back, so we can kind of get complacent and feel like we got to do something with some of the other guys. And it's like, no, like, we can't lose sight on kind of what got us to whatever point we ended up getting to last year. And so, fortunately, we got the right type of guys here in the character. So it makes my life a lot easier.
Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady, you know, as you say, we got to get better. Is there a thing you want to get better? You could say more points. You could say better efficiency. But was there something in the offense last season you felt like we could use a dash of, whatever it might be, intermediate passing game, vertical passing game, runs in the red zone? Like, are there any things that you're kind of keying in on where you would like to be better?
There's plenty. I'd be lying to you if I felt comfortable, like, kind of showing, you know, spreading it out there.
Sure,
because
sure,
that's obviously something that we gotta you know, grow this year. But look, we obviously have tendencies. You put, you know, like you're saying, you know, coming back off of the previous season, I only called so many games. Now I have a full season, and so it's like, the more that you put stuff on tape, the more that people understand how you might call a game and how, you know, how your guys kind of play. And so there's so many elements that we can get better at, and we just have to make sure that we're not only focusing on those and then losing sight on the things that we did well. And so that's where I kind of always feel it, of not just losing sight on that. And sometimes you look at the end of a season, you're like, man, we were so good at that 2 years ago. Why weren't we good at this past year? And it's like, did we still put the same emphasis on it? And so that's the delicate balance. But I hope there's a lot of things that you guys see next season that it's like, hey, that was an improvement on the previous season.
What kind of role can you play in helping Josh develop chemistry with the target? Sometimes we watch, we think, oh, he's got it with that guy, and maybe with this guy over here, whether he's new or they're just trying to get improved chemistry. I'm thinking about Josh and Dalton Kincaid. How can you help make the chemistry kind of really hit?
Well, I think sometimes it's just starting the dialogue, you know, and I think that's some of the biggest growth that Josh has just had in general. is just communicating with the wide receivers exactly how he sees it. You see him after practice kind of working it. So we might be out of practice, and I might call a play with the intent of getting Dalton Kincaid the ball. And whether whether it was a completion or not, sometimes the incompletions are some of the best things. And I know it sounds awful, and look, don't get me wrong, in games I want the completions. I'll take a bad-looking play that ends well. But right now, some of it is, man, Josh needed to feel that type of throw of like, hey, now we can talk through what that ball – so when we get into the film, it's like next time we get in this situation, Dalton, this is where that ball has to go. I don't want you to do anything differently. Sometimes people have a tendency – if the ball wasn't completed, the receiver naturally feels like they have to do something differently. And so right now, him getting a feel of understanding what kind of ball do I have to throw to Keon Coleman as opposed to the type of ball I have to throw to Josh Palmer. And so working through those, I'm one of Josh's biggest fans, but I'm also one of his biggest haters. And sometimes when bad happens in training camp, sometimes that's really a positive for me, and I kind of smile. I'm like, all right, that's good, because we're going to be able to talk through that. And so I have to just make sure I'm consistently staying on, and I'm putting him in stressful situations so that he can make the decisions to be able to then have that communication.
On the decision-making, one thing I've wondered is the turnovers from last year. 8 turnovers last year, fewest since the merger, which, congrats on that. Anything that ends with fewest since the merger is usually pretty impressive. How repeatable do you see that being? Maybe not to be, like, right at 8, but to have an offense that either the way it's built or the players themselves are at the top of the league or near the top of the league and not turning the ball over.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, after the first drive last year, we were on pace to break the all-time record for turnovers because we fumbled on the first drive of the season, strip sack. So to be able to do as well as we did, giving up the least amount of sacks and turnovers after the first drive was a pretty good improvement. I think at the end of the day, it's stressing it. It's important. Look, turnovers are going to happen. There's going to be sometimes guys make good plays, and sometimes we might not have turned the ball over, but it was a turnover-worthy play. And, so sometimes even when we're watching tape, we can't just focus on the result of it, where it's like, hey, I know the DB dropped it, so we're good. Like, no, that was a turnover. And I think it's important to the guys. We understand if we don't turn the ball over, we're going to win a lot of football games. And understand that style of play, and so we stress it on the practice field. Is the ball on the outside arm? Is the decision making where it needs to be, not just on the result of the play? And like I said, we got the guys that they kind of take the ownership and kind of handle it themselves, and that accountability makes my life a lot easier.
Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady. When we look at the ultimate goal, this team is a Super Bowl caliber team. We say it all the time. I'm sure you guys feel that and think that. Do you feel like it comes down to a couple plays in those moments? I mean, I guess I wonder how it feels to have been that close and to be that close, knowing that, you might be right back there in the same spot basically the same year, and it's just a couple plays. Like, does that drive you? Does it drive you nuts? Does it kind of wash out like, hey, sometimes it's out of your control, sometimes it's in your control?
Yeah, look, like, at the end of the day, we've had the ball with the opportunity to go score to win the football game in the last 2 years, and we need to get it done, right? And that falls on me. And so, but I don't want our guys thinking that it's, hey, when we get in these critical moments, I have to do something extraordinary. And sometimes just doing our job and just executing and being at, everything that we've done in training camp is in those moments. We don't have to change who we are. And so, some people say it's just a couple plays. Well, it could be some of these plays right now we're doing in training camp that is what's going to make the difference in. And I know it sounds crazy, but in those moments, sometimes it's like, hey, can we do the simple better in the most critical moments? And is our detail and our execution where they need to be? And so that's something that I kind of stress. If the guys feel like in those moments that I have to make the play, that's usually when bad things happen. And so I hope we get those opportunities again this year, and we're doing everything we can to, earn it this year.
All observers said yesterday Keon had a pretty nice day. Keon Coleman.
He did. And look, like, even when it's kind of the same thing we talk with Josh. It might be an incomplete pass, or it might be a drop. It might be a really good play, and we're coaching every little detail of it. So trying not to get caught up on the results. But I love – look, I liked how Keon played last year. I've said that to everybody. Obviously the injury was unfortunate, but – just seeing his dialogue and his communication with Josh, now the pads are coming on, you can really see wide receiver play. Like, wide receiver's pads is critical for them. So, obviously it'll be a huge run emphasis today, so it's not a But you get to see a lot about receivers in the run game. It's important to us. And so you might not see a lot of the splash plays from the wide receivers today, but you'll get to see a lot of, you'll learn a lot about our football team.
On Khalil Shakir the other day was talking about his ability to beat man coverage and new techniques and things that maybe he's been working on to do that. Do you feel like even though he's been in the league a few years, that he has maybe another step in that area, beating man coverage maybe specifically and where he plays? How do you see Shakir and maybe more another step in his game?
Yeah, no, it's you know, Khalil is such a conscious player, and he sets goals himself and understands opportunities and ways he has to get better. And, you know, part of the thing is we don't get a lot of man coverage. And, you know, so it's how can I work these things without getting a lot of practice versus it, without getting a lot of looks at it in season and games, especially when you're playing in the slot, the way the DBs kind of cover you in the slot. A guy like Taron Johnson is going to cover you differently than a guy outside at Christian Benford. And so, but the intentionality in the release game, to be able to create that separation, it's not all just speed. But in order to get the separation, it's how do I run the routes, and just sometimes it's slowing you down. And so, getting Khalil to understand that and the leverage and whatnot, and, but he's so conscientious in everything that he does that, you know, if we get man coverage this year, I'm excited to see how he kind of performs with it.
You broke your streak of 1-0 tweets.
I did?
Yeah, for the Florida Panthers.
Oh.
You did it for the Florida Panthers. Back-to-back Stanley Cup champs.
Back-to-back, baby.
So that's not like a bandwagon thing or anything, right? Like, you're from that.
Yeah, I'm from South Florida. Yeah, like, yeah. Look, my high school graduation was in the arena that they kind of play in. Yeah. But don't get me wrong, like, South Florida sports, you know, in general, you know, it's not like Buffalo right here, where, you know, Florida Panthers growing up, it wasn't like, you know, I was the Pavel Bure type of Olli Jokinen type, but it wasn't where you're selling out and everything right now. But, so I'd be lying to you, like, I'm watching every game. I'm not that diehard. I'm a baseball, football and heat, but the Panthers, I do enjoy watching it. Just like when the Sabres get rolling, I'm going to enjoy watching them.
It's very Fort Lauderdale, right? More than it is Miami for them?
Sure. Yeah. Cause they're, you know, and it's just like any, you know, even when you play the Dolphins, right, they show South Beach, right? Yeah. But we know where that stadium actually is. And so, but that's very much a Fort Lauderdale crowd as opposed to the Miami Heat, South Beach type of vibe.
Right. That's right.
All right. Yeah, I'm just scrolling.
I got to change it then. You know, I got to, you know, I don't know. Obviously, probably the Buffalo fans don't probably enjoy seeing,
no. I think they're fine.
That's fine.
Playoff hockey. There's nothing like playoff hockey. And when the Sabres go to the playoffs, I'm going to enjoy going to those playoff hockey games because it's a lot of fun to watch and be a part of.
And now the countdown is on. You know, the next 1-0 tweet, you know, Sunday night, Baltimore.
That's it.
We'll be ready for it.
That's it. That's it. And everyone sees it as it only starts in the games, but it's the mindset that we have every single day right here. And so I don't care how it looks. I don't care if it's pretty. I don't care if it's ugly. You know, find a way. There's no pretty losses, and there's no ugly wins. You find a way at the end of the season. No one cares about the scores that we might feel after end of the season. It's like, oh, it was a 21. It was a 7-6 game at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. We just saw that we had one more win. So that's what we're just trying to get our guys with the right mindset of that. Is it don't matter how, just find a way.
Very good. Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady. Enjoyed today's practice, full pads, and good luck this season.
Awesome. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Jeremy and Joe, be back in a moment from training camp here from St. John Fisher on WGR. Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich about to join us here. See if he wants any piece of our riveting conversation. when we're waiting for you guys to come over,
fake.
We get a few minutes. Does bug spray work? It doesn't work for me.
I don't get affected by bugs.
So. Oh, look at this. Natural.
He doesn't even need it.
Only in the state of Minnesota. Okay. When we go to Minnesota Lake Country is where I get affected by bugs.
Very good.
I will say this is – I have a left side headset, so this is very different.
Oh, yeah.
On the right side.
You can flip it over.
I got to deal with adversity.
Okay. Adversity. So, I like it. Yeah. Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich with us. Jeremy and Joe, thanks for taking some time to sit down. I wanted to start talking with you about Tre'Davious White because you've been here pretty much since he's been here.
That's right.
And you've seen Trey from rookie to all pro to battling the injuries, and now he's back out there. And what's it like to see him like this in this scenario?
You know, I think I'll start on a personal level. In my press conference the other day, I said it. I mean, you know, seeing him grow from a rookie to become an all-pro, go through two injuries, and the heartbreak that it was, you know, in the end, this is a business. You know, that's the toughest thing about playing and coaching in this league. There is – you build relationships. You're around each other all the time. You care about their families and all those type of things. And, you know, I can, you know, it's just from a personal side, it's tremendous to see him back out there and to see him, you know, as close to Trey White as we all know he could possibly be with the stuff he's gone through. And then, you know, I mean, he's doing some Trey White things right now. You know, he needs to continue. We'll see how it goes. I mean, we're five practices in. So we'll just see how it goes. Like I said, we're not going to ride the roller coaster of things, but right now he's doing a nice job. And, you know, we need him to continue to bring that leadership and be a tone setter.
How different has he been this offseason because he's had an offseason? How many of those past years?
Yeah.
It's been, what, four or five years?
Yeah, I said it because it was interesting. We were walking down with one of the strength coaches, and there's a hill over here on the other side of this field house. And I guess off his first rehab, he used to be backpedaling and sprinting up this hill to rehab the ACL. You know, and then he comes back from that, and it was a tough uphill climb. And then he kind of gotten, if you remember, the year he tore his Achilles, what year was that? That was
23.
Yeah, 23. I've been here nine, so they all mix up. But, you know, it was 23, and then he kind of gets in that rhythm, and bang, his Achilles goes, and you're like, God bless, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so then he didn't have that offseason. So, you know, it's good to see. I said it before that he's had an offseason. He came up to me in practice, and I'm like, hey, bud, how's it, you know, how you feeling? He said, it feels good to have legs. This is finally I've had an offseason, you know. So, true professional, can't say enough about him. Like I said, he deserves to be talked about for everything he's done for this organization and this community, along with a lot of other guys.
You've got competition amongst teammates. How valuable is Trey White going to be for Max Hairston as a rookie coming this
season? I don't think you can put a value on it. You know, I don't think you could put a value on it because, you know, it's funny when Max got here, he's like, Trey White is a corner I used to watch back when he was younger, you know. So I know Trey was brought up by certain guys. You guys probably won't even remember, but I think Trey would say that there was a dude here that used to play for the Chargers our first year named Sharice Wright. And Sharice Wright, I know, really helped Tre'Davious his rookie year. So, you know, it's a pay it forward thing, you know. And Tre'Davious knows where he's at in his career. He knows that not only is his job to go out and play damn good football, excuse my language, but it's also to pour into the young guys and the next generation. So, like he says, when he's home watching it, he can watch Max Hairston down the road here when his time's, you know, said and done.
Do you feel like he's also potentially going to be one of the fan favorites on Hard Knocks, Trey White?
I don't know about Hard Knocks, but I know here in Western New York, he gets as loud a roar when he walks out of that tunnel as anybody.
You know. How about Hairston? What have you seen from him so far in his time with the Bills?
Yeah, I think we all know he's super talented. You know, I said in my press conference, I hate to keep coming back to that, but, you know, I'm a man of habit. So, you know, really, he had a pretty dang good first day. Second day is a little rocky. You know, it's, you know, and now as we go through it, there's a lot we're throwing at these guys. Not only technique and fundamentals, but then you talk about scheme, formation awareness, situation, all those type of things. So we're not going to ride the roller coaster. Super talented, great dude, learning to be a pro, learning what that takes. And he certainly got a great room to learn from, and we'll see where that goes.
A lot of the scouting reports on him were, you know, ball skills. He's aggressive. And do you have to kind of teach him how to walk the line about when to do that in your system versus when to let his ability kind of take over?
Yeah, I think and when you say aggressive, are you saying physical?
Just
or
like
saying,
jumping, looking for the ball, trying to be a ball hawk.
Okay,
that's a lot of what they said about him coming out.
I mean, you know, there's a certain training process we go through, and it's funny, you know, you think about the physical aspect of training, but there's also, you got to train your eyes, you know. So we're just going to make sure his eyes are trained. We're not going to take his instincts or football intellect away from him, but we're going to make sure his eyes are in the right spot.
Is that one thing too? You mentioned like the physical part, because he is smaller and now the pads are on.
Right.
How much of an adjustment do you feel like that could be for him, is learning how to be successful in the league despite the fact he might be giving up a little bit of size?
I think if you ask any of those guys that have, you know, I don't want to say, you know, for lack of a better word, become benchmark players on our defense, I think that adjustment, that physicality adjustment, no matter how big, no matter your size. I mean, shoot, Taron Johnson's not the biggest guy in the world, but there's always an adjustment. And, you know, the quicker you can adjust to that and the more urgency we can create to that adjustment as coaches, and bring awareness to that, I think the better off we're going to be.
Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich with us. The rest of the secondary, let's talk a little bit more. Cole Bishop, year two for him. He missed a lot of this part of last year.
Yes.
So, coming along well?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're seeing a different Cole. You know, we're seeing a different Cole. Here's a guy that didn't have training camp practices. You know, he gets thrown in the mix multiple times during the season and did a good job, you know. But we're looking for him to do an even better job, as we are every one of our players, you know. And it's all about growth and getting better. And as we know, and he's certainly showing signs of that. I thought he had a pretty dang good day yesterday. He showed up. He was physical. We'd like to see him come away with that ball that was thrown deep. It ended up being a PBU collision there, but we need to come away with that ball, and that's the point there is, you know, as we talk about, the best thing we can do is get the ball back to 17 as fast as we possibly can.
Bobby Babich with us. How about at linebacker? So Matt Milano, kind of like, actually with Trey White, like getting a full off season for him, and how important that could be, him being at this age, but, I mean, out there on the field, does it just look like the same old Matt Milano?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I coached him for 2 years, been around him since he's been here. It's interesting. Me and Matt have been here the same number of years. But, you know, like I always say, like, I don't want to put expectations on players, but, you know, Matt Milano is Matt Milano. We all know what a healthy Matt Milano looks like, a healthy, in-rhythm Matt Milano. And by rhythm, that just means getting in the flow of the game. And, you know, last year was very tumultuous for him. We thought we were going to get him back. And then he comes back. We take care of him. He misses time. And then nothing that he could have done about it, but it was just an unfortunate deal. So it's the same thing with Tre'Davious White. I think that's a very similar deal to where, as long as we can keep him healthy and keep him on the field, we can get Matt into the best position to be the Matt Milano we all know and love, and, you know, to help us, you know, reach our ultimate goals.
This offseason for the defense was about two things. The first was locking in pieces for long term. That's Christian Benford, Greg Rousseau, Terrell Bernard. How was it for you seeing those deals get done, knowing, like, all right, I got cornerstone pieces coming back?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting. Like, you look at the professional level of it, and you're like, okay, you do the evaluation, and you're like, you know, CB, okay, good. We've got a corner that we all love and we view very highly. Bang, we got Terrell Bernard in the middle of our defense, you know, the quarterback of our defense. And then you talk about Greg, who I think really came on last year and affected the passer in a great way. And not only the passer, he affected the run game. So, you know, and he's got room for growth. So, at the professional level, you're like, okay, you feel great about that. But then at the personal level, it's, you know, it goes a little deeper than that, you know, and you got to be able to separate that. But, I mean, Christian Benford is – I don't think people understand, man. He is – he's like when your kids don't listen, he's the exact opposite. Like, everything you tell him to do, he's going to do, and you don't have to tell him twice. His mindset, he's physical, he can cover, like, everything you want, he checks the boxes. And then you look at TB. I have a close relationship with TB, obviously, as a linebacker's coach, and to see his development and where he's come to be the leader of this defense, and even if you go back before he's named the starter, he missed the whole preseason, you know, but we felt good about where he was at, naming him that, and, you know, that saying that, okay, that development and that, you know, and I'm using those two as an example, but that progression of those guys landed where we felt like it was supposed to land.
With Benford, it seems like there's a lot of talk that he's not getting enough attention. He might not need it, but there's that ESPN piece about the top 10 at every position, and they named NFL executive scouts, coaches named 29 corners, and Benford's name didn't come up. Like, it's kind of, for some reason, I don't know, people aren't paying attention? They're not noticing?
Yeah, I don't. We paid attention.
Yeah, for sure.
We noticed. So that's all that matters. We know what we have in Christian Benford. And all you got to do is watch the tape.
Yeah. How about some of the newcomers? Joey Bosa, how are things looking for him?
Great, great. We have a good plan going with Joey. I've said it before. Our whole goal is to make sure he's available. We're working through that close with Joey, you know. But he's been a welcome addition. I think he needed a breath of fresh air. You know, and we know what Joey Bosa has done in this league, and we need to get him to be in the Joey Bosa that everybody recognizes and deals with, and a lot of that is availability.
This is one of those spots where you watch him play for another team. You see the scouting department, you're talking about him in the offseason, and you're thinking just like at the peak of his powers, like, what you're getting here is legit.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to it, I'll never forget. You know, I listened to all kinds of things, especially press conferences. I had mentioned the other day that, you know, I just listened to the way people do press conferences, try to make myself better, right? So I'll never forget, I was listening to a mic'd up. I don't know, maybe you guys remember what year this was, but they came to Buffalo. The Chargers came to Buffalo, and he had a very good game against the Buffalo Bills. And he yelled, I'm mic'd up. He's running off the field after a sack or TFL, and he's yelling, I'm an effing beast, you know? So it's like, it's I can remember that because of the impact he can have on games and those type of things and, you know, that intensity and those type of things. So, you know, we're going to try our best. I'm not putting expectations on players, but we're going to put him in the best position possible, and certainly he's working his tail off to get there.
That might have been 2018. That might have been, Josh's rookie year. Maybe.
Yeah.
So you mentioned managing him and then a couple of guys that obviously will be serving suspensions early in the year. How important is it to fast-track's the right word, but a couple of your early draft picks on the defensive line and playing, you know, early on in the season when those guys will be unavailable?
Yeah, I think we took those guys where we took them for a reason, and there's nothing like competition, you know, to bring the best out in everybody, and that's not only for young guys, that's for veterans too. And the infusion of youth is good, right? The infusion of youth is good, but – there's definitely going to be youth on this defense. There's definitely going to be some youth on this defense. And what role, we're not 100% sure, but we're doing everything we can to make sure they're ready and rocking and rolling, to help bring value to what we're trying to get to. That's the whole talk to our defense. Like, their job is to bring value to the point where, hey, I'm doing things to help the Bills potentially win the Super Bowl. And that's what their job is. So how much value are you going to bring, right? And so, that's the message to those guys, and we'll take it along. We'll do our evaluations.
Going back to last year, you know, great in turnovers, the big problems.
Takeaways.
Thank you, Ed. Turning the ball over your way. Yeah. Well, both sides of the ball, great in turnovers, great in takeaways. I saw you wearing a hat that said take it away.
Yeah.
The defense needs hats, right? The offense is going to have hats. You're going to need hats. So.
And I want to go on record. Can't quote me. I think we had hats first.
Yeah?
We had hats first last year.
That's important.
Okay.
We had the SFP hats.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that because that is one of those stats that you commonly will hear, that regresses. That's almost an impossible thing to maintain year to year.
Yeah.
But I think every year that you've been here at least, and Sean, the defense has been top 10 in takeaways. In a lot of years, it's number one or number two. So, I don't know, do you agree that is a hard thing to maintain and you guys have just been able to be able to do
that? Yeah, I think it's a philosophical thing. You know, I've been around the league. I've coached at three organizations. You know, and you sit back when you're an assistant and you kind of try to look at the way you do things and all that. And, you know, I'll give credit where credit is due. Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier are doing an unbelievable job going back to when Les was here and it was pretty impressive how every day we that's what we talk about every single day, and we show where there's meat left on the bone where we can still take it away. And that's hard to do, right? You've got so much to accomplish, and you can lose things that you want to value all the time if you get too spread thin. So we make sure we always come back to that. It's part of you get what you emphasize. We drill it constantly. We're constantly talking about it. You know, and I think the other thing is we talk about you got to have the fever, you got to have the disease of the ball. Like, it's something to think about. It starts with your brain before you even think about taking it away, to where you're constantly thinking about the ball, you know. And we're encouraging guys to get diagnosed with that disease or that fever of I'm constantly thinking about the ball. Christian Bedford, if, you know, fans are here, you guys are here watching practice, you watch him, all he's thinking about is the ball, even in the run game, you know. And we're going to secure tackles, we're going to do all those type of things, but that's, I guess, you get what you emphasize, and then you got to have players that can take it away.
Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich, one last one for me. Takeaways, keep them where they are. Third down defense, one of the issues, of course, to address.
Absolutely.
Is it as simple as just saying that, or do you kind of branch off, this is why we had problems?
Yeah, I think you not only look schematically, you look how your rush and coverage is working together. you address, are we putting our guys in the best situations? What was good for us? You know, what way is the NFL trending? What teams are you playing? Making sure your game plan is good. So there's a lot that goes into it, but absolutely we weren't good enough on third down last year. Our players know that, and we know you just talked about takeaways. We know the best thing for the Buffalo Bills is to get Josh Allen back out on the field as fast as you possibly can. And what's the way to do that? It's get off the field on third down when you talk about three and outs and taking the ball away. It's as simple as that. Like, let's keep it elementary, right? So, you know, that's been a big emphasis of ours. Certainly we have to get better there. Our players know it. We address it every time we get to third down situations, you know, and they are very intentional about that.
Very good. Bills defensive coordinator Bobby Babich, thanks for the time. Best of luck this season.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll step aside here from St. John Fisher. Return in a moment. It's training camp coverage here on WGR.
I mean, he's getting out of his comfort zone. You know, he's not the most vocal guy, but that's something he's really getting after, talking to the young guys, talking to everybody else, making sure we understand whatever it is, how we do things here, and stuff like that.
That's Keon Coleman on Khalil Shakir. Will he take a step forward? Jeremy and Joe, a few minutes here with NFL analyst Benjamin Solak of ESPN, who popped in for a quick visit. I know you're going to go talk to Joe Brady, so we won't keep you too long. Good to see you again.
Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago I was out here. Yeah. Same seat, same desk. Yeah. Easy to find you guys.
Same seat, same desk, and
find the pavilion.
And same storyline. Hey, can the Bills find that little extra bit to get the job done? I mean, it's a lot of great years around here and a lot of what's the one thing that's been missing?
Yeah, it's there was a great stat in the FTN Almanac this year that previewed the season. On a five-year stretch, if you look at the best teams to ever not make a Super Bowl by DVOA. DVOA is a catch-all metric. It's just era-adjusted team efficiency. How good are you for your time relative to your competitors? Five-year stretch for a team that never made the Super Bowl. The best team in NFL history by DVOA is the 2020 to 2024 Buffalo Bills, right? Yeah. Second is the 2020 to 2024 Ravens, right? Because there's this guy on top of the conference right now who's not letting anybody through, right? He wears 15 red and white and plays in Kansas City. And so can they find a little bit more? Absolutely. That's going to continue to be the thought, the urgency. Even if they had made one of the five Super Bowls, if they had made two and won one of them and lost one of them, they'd still be sitting down every single year in May and June and July and saying, all right, here's what the Chiefs do. Here's what the Ravens do. How are we going to get, you know, an inch ahead of these guys? Because the margins are so thin between those teams. Obviously, the way the coin flips have fallen, it's been all Kansas City. It's been historically all Kansas City. But for as frustrating as it is, I promise you that the guys over there in Kansas City are also sitting there going, okay, how are we going to stay ahead of these Bills? How are we going to stay ahead of 17? How are we going to deal with this team? The margins are that thin. It just has not come up Buffalo yet.
How much ground do you feel like they could have made up this offseason with the moves they've made? Mm-hmm. I don't know how different they'll look on both sides of the ball. I think defensively the personnel is certainly different.
Yep.
Offensively, it's mostly Palmer and Moore. And maybe offensively they try to look similar to what they did last year.
Yeah, I think that when they made the Von Miller bet a few years ago, the idea was, okay, one ringer, pass rusher, he's going to dominate for us in the playoffs. Like, this is going to be the difference-making guy. And that's a lot of chips on one dude. And obviously the name was Von Miller, and that's a dude that you know, like, from a talent perspective, you want to be that ringer guy, but it's still one bet. You miss that bet, you're back exactly where you were. The approach this year is the shotgun approach, right? Not the sniper rifle, but the shotgun. We're going to get Joey in the building. We're going to get Larry in the building. We're going to get Michael in the building. We're going to draft the guy. We're going to, you know, we are going to have dudes on dudes on dudes. And hopefully by the time we get to January, we have collectively, right, you know, Moneyball in the aggregate, built enough of that elite pass rush, of that game-winning player. Because when we talk about January football, we talk about elite game-winning players. And Buffalo's issue on defense has always been that because of what Sean does schematically, defensively, they punch above their weight for the regular season. They get so much out of, you know, good players, quality players, but more so like your B-tier players, your solid starters. And then they get to a point where they have to play three playoff offenses in a row, and they just, at some point, they get outgunned, right? They just get out-muscled by these teams that have built around superstars. So the hope is that in the aggregate, right, whether it's a healthy Joey Bosa or a step forward from Gregory Rousseau or you know, a fresh Michael Holt or whatever it is, you get that pass rusher that you need. You get that depth on the defensive line you need to really dominate up front. So have they done enough? Ask me in November. You know, I'll let you know when we get there.
Yeah. Bills fans sometimes get to that game against Kansas City and feel like they're outgunned. A lot of Bills fans feel like they're maybe outmatched. Like, McDermott won't have the answers against Andy Reid. Do you think he would have them if, in fact, those pieces are the right pieces?
Yeah. I would say that if we could emphatically point to a defensive coordinator who has had the answers against Andy Reid and against Patrick Mahomes over their time together, then I would fault McDermott a little bit more, right? There was that moment we thought it was going to be the Bengals and Lou Anarumo because they were playing so well against elite quarterbacks, and then that fell apart for the Bengals, right? They weren't able to sustain that. So there's really been no coordinator, no defensive system, no stylistic approach that I can point to and say, okay, this always takes the Chiefs from a 30-point team to a 23-point team. We got to do it this way. It just hasn't been there. They're just too stinking good. And so it's hard to fault McDermott too far because I'm not sure the solution, right, that, oh, this is how you respond to this quarterback, how you respond to this team. I'm not sure that solution exists. With that said, man, you know what the money's for? You know what the check is for? The check is for beating that guy, the guy in the conference, right? It ain't a question mark what the money is for here in Buffalo. You got to beat the Chiefs. You got to beat 15. Sean McDermott is a defensive coach. He's been here for, what, 8 seasons now? Like, at some point, win, you know? And yeah. So it's tough to fault him too far. But, yeah, like, you know, that you got to beat the guys. And I trust me, he's losing sleep over it. But eventually, at some point, yeah, you got to come up with a solution or someone's going to move on.
That's the thing, too, is, like, I'll ask you in November. Mm-hmm. They have been very good defensively in the regular season, and I think because they've done that, and I think the stat is against the Chiefs in the playoffs, Kansas City has averaged 34 against the Bills and 24 against everybody else, or it's something like that. Mm-hmm. That might only be the last 4 years, by the way, not all five. But they could be looking really good in the regular season, and there's just this talking point about McDermott that is somewhat based in fact that his defense will regress when it gets to the postseason. Yep. Is that, though, to you, just a Chiefs-specific thing? Like, when they go and play the Ravens, they go and play when they get the Denvers of the world in the wild card round, do you feel like it's a McDermott thing or is it more of a Chiefs thing?
So, yeah, Denver doesn't count. Throw that out. Yeah. Bo Nix was never going to beat anybody in the postseason, right? That offense was scraping it together with a lot of Sean Payton machinations, and they were going to run into a playoff team, and they were going to implode a little bit. It's more of a McDermott thing than the Chiefs thing, and it's the nature of the defense that they play. If you look at Steve Spagnuolo for the Chiefs, Steve Spagnuolo is inherently a very matchup-oriented, game-plan-oriented. I'm trying to get you to these third and long downs where I can design up these blitzes. They're going to win for me in these key moments, right? Fourth and five, we got two free rushers off the strong side, right? Like, the whole point is to get you to those spots where he knows what your tendencies are going to be, and then he's going to be able to exploit them. Sean rushes four, drop seven, and wants to out-effort you. He wants to out-team you. He wants to out, you know, compete and hustle and tackle you. And Sean does not pitch a lot of change-ups and cutters and those swing and miss pitches, right? Those big moment pitches, go and get the strikeouts. This is a fundamentals, you know, I want to say bend but don't break, but they were really bad on third down last year, so it didn't end up being that way at all. But hopefully a bend but don't break defense that over time just sits on you for long enough, forces enough threes instead of sevens, forces a couple punts, and then our offense is going to win for us by being effective on the other side. It is a simple defense on a chalkboard, and that defense looks really good against bad quarterbacks, bad offensive coordinators, and teams that you have outgunned, teams who don't have the wide receiver talent or the running back talent or the offensive line talent. Then you get to January football. And the longer and longer I do this, the more emphatically I believe that January football is just so different than September to December football. And if you're not building and optimizing for January football, you're going to look real good, and then you're going to get to the postseason, and someone's going to punch you in the mouth, and you don't know how that feels. And I think over time, yeah, you can say for Buffalo pretty emphatically that the way that Sean likes to play defense, where and Christian Benford, right, Greg Rousseau, Ed Oliver, these are good players. Are they stars at their positions? Not necessarily. And so they look great for the regular season. They get to the January football, and then you start to feel a little bit, yeah, outweight class when you play against those playoff offenses.
Benjamin Solak of ESPN. On the offensive side, just really quickly, do they have the horses there? They last year went to the everybody eats mindset. They're doing it without a number one. They make the trade for Cooper. This year, a couple guys leave, and it's Josh Palmer and Elijah Moore that are really the only different things for this offense. Pretty much everybody else returns.
Yep.
Is it going to look any different?
Is 17 still the quarterback?
Sure.
Yep. Yeah, they got the horses. They'll be all right. I mean, it's as simple as if he continues to play the way he did last year, being able to ramp the turnovers down, being willing to be a little bit more in the structure of the offense. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like you're as long as you have functional play at wide receiver, functional play at running back, and functional play at tight end, like not limiting factors, you're going to be fine. The other thing is that offensive line, right, which over the last 2 seasons has been the most contiguous offensive line, right? They're not missing snaps. These guys are playing together for thousands of snaps over the last 2 years. That continuity allows them to be so good in the running game, so good on third and fourth down, right, so good in those key moments. And so Josh, the offensive line, Brady, I believe in it. And if you get more out of you expect than Josh Palmer and Elijah Moore, a step forward from Dalton Kincaid, great. But as long as 17's the guy, they have what it takes to be a Super Bowl caliber offense. I believe that.
Benjamin Solak, ESPN. We'll let you run. We know you've got stuff
to do.
Fellas. So we'll get you out of here. Thanks for stopping by and continued, you know, good luck on the journey around the rest of camps.
Take care.
All right, Benjamin Solak, ESPN NFL analyst. We thank you for stopping by. And right in here, stepping in, is Bills special teams coordinator Chris Tabor. Yeah, we knew we had you coming. So, you know, we're on 6 to 10, Chris. So the problem is all of our guests, they wake up around like 8 o'clock and on. You know, if you wanted to come at 6, we would have welcomed you. It would have been all right.
No, that's okay. I think this is a good time right here.
All right. Well, welcome, Jeremy and Joe. Camp, special teams, like we started off the show talking special teams. We're going to talk to Steve Tasker next segment how the change last year was obviously drastic, and then another change this year. And I wonder as a special teams coach if it's been an exciting time to kind of go through this, if you know, these changes. It seems like they've been leaning on the special teams coaches and coordinators when talking about all these changes they've tried to implement with a dynamic kickoff.
No, the league's done a really nice job of asking our community with the help of designing this. But I think, you know, the biggest change that, you know, last year shocked everybody, right, what it looked like, and I think everyone kind of got used to it. I still think that there's things that are a work in progress as you're going through. I think the biggest change, though, this year will be is now with the touchback going to the 35, you're probably going to see more balls in play. So you're looking at an uptick of, you know, let's say last year, 24 to 27 returns possibly per team. You're talking about 75. So it's going to be a, you know, as we always say, they want a watchable play. And I'm for that, you know, and exciting time, but we got to get good at it.
I was telling Joe, I remember back a Super Bowl where John Casey kicks the ball out of bounds and it's at the 40 for Tom Brady, and it's funny how the evolution of it is. Kicking out of bounds was the 40. What a penalty. Now kicking in the end zone's the 35. I mean, it's drastic.
It is, because if you think, you know, let's say you kick a touchback, team gets the ball at the 35, and the offense goes out. And let's say the defense does a great job, and, you know, you're at the 44-yard line. I mean, now we're – today's punter, you're almost in that pooch area where now you're getting an inside the 20, inside the 15. On the flip side of that, now the long field that takes place, all of a result of essentially really the touchback.
Yeah.
Because if the defense does a nice job on three and out, I mean, still your punter has the opportunity to flip the field again right there. So it's an interesting play.
You being out of the league, not coaching in the league last year and watching the first year of tape on the dynamic kickoff, was that – do you feel like it's a different perspective for you watching it and not necessarily, you know, living in it yet? So I almost want to ask, it's kind of new to you, but I'm sure you're in those meetings and you've watched all of them that you wouldn't – maybe it doesn't feel new.
No, at times it still does.
Yeah.
I think I'm over the newness, though. I think probably it really hit me when we were in OTAs and when we lined up to do it the first time, and I was like, wow, everybody's right here. Mm-hmm. And when you see it on TV, it's still different. But I think the thing that's different for me now is knowing our players, what their skill sets are, and how you want to return the football, and what you find problems with everything. You just have to figure out, hey, this is going to be our scheme. Where are the stressors at? And then what are our answers for that stressor based on the people that you have? So that was always the piece last year that I didn't have. I wasn't coaching a player. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, man, I could do this, but let's say you don't have a player that could accomplish that skill set. Then what are you going to do? So I think that's been the that's been the fun challenge.
Yeah, that was a wonder. I know last year when it first was implemented, like, would the profile of the players that are on those kickoffs change at all? Like, would teams look for bigger players out there? And I don't know, like, it didn't really feel like it was that drastic of a change. Maybe teams are still trying to figure that out.
You know, I think people talked about it, but at the end of the day, you can't. You can't do that. I mean, there's when you build the, you know, 53 to game day 48, like, there's only so many bodies. Like, you, automatically, you know, there's going to be two quarterbacks. There's going to be eight offensive linemen. I mean, it starts to to whittle itself. So saying that, hey, you need these body types, well, it just doesn't work like that.
Chris Tabor, Bill's special teams coordinator, joining us here from St. John Fisher. You know, as you get a look at your group, the draft happens. A lot of times we're talking about the draft and younger players are talking about a willingness to contribute on special teams. And do you find when young players come into this league that they are eager, ready to do whatever it takes? Or some players, does it take a – maybe they didn't do that in college and it's like, listen, you're here now. This is your way. This is your way on the team.
You get both. You get both, and I think that's pretty natural. Some guys come in and they're very willing and they understand. Some guys are coming in, and as you alluded to earlier, like didn't really play a lot of special. Maybe they did in their freshman year, but haven't done it for a long time. And then, you know, they get here and they think, well, I'm just going to be offense, defense. Well, it's as we were talking about the numbers just a little bit ago, like when you start doing the numbers, I probably have 26 guys that I can pick from. Now, within that, you're going to start whittling, hey, you can't not using these receivers. You know, they're not using this running back. So I say 26, but then it dwindles down even more. And within that, you have to help some of those young players who they don't understand the numbers.
Yeah.
And you got to coach them up there a little bit, and it heightens their awareness.
One thing I wonder about here, we have Travis Hunter, who's ready to play maybe offense and defense. Is that possible at all that it gateways maybe the special teams coaches, coordinators, say, hey, can I have 5 snaps from this receiver on a return game? You know, if he's going to play both sides of the ball, I'm not asking for that much. Or is it just too tough because of meetings?
No, I think it's you know, there's a lot of things that go into that, right? It could be injuries, where you're at, what the matchups are, how many plays is a guy playing in those offensive packages or defensive packages. Because if you have a helmet on game day, you have to contribute to winning. So that's part of the fun puzzle for special teams coaches, like, okay, hey, he had a big role last week. Maybe his role's not as big, but he has a helmet. He has to help us win. So we were using this player. His role's bigger. Now we need to use this player. And that's the fun challenge that I like to say.
Your first time coaching a lot of these guys, is anybody standing out to you? I mean, Cam Lewis, of course, has been here a while. There's a bunch of names I can roll through that have been kind of core special teams players here for a while. Who stands out to you?
Oh, gosh. Loaded question.
Yeah.
Because then I might forget somebody, and I don't want to do that. Here's what I would say overall. It's a group that I think they like playing football. They're intelligent football players. I have a lot of confidence in them. The more, you know, we're growing together and we're, you know, at the beginning of spring, learning each other. Now we're, and I'm installing new stuff. Then you come now to training camp and the installs go a little bit faster because they understand what I'm looking for and I also understand what their skill sets are. But it's been really nice because we do have some veteran guys, a la Cam, that, you know, they say, hey, Tapes, you might need to re-hit this for the young guys. Where I listen to that. So it's nice on my end to have some experienced guys that give me a little view, kind of hit me on my blind spots a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's nice.
When you're coming in to coach a kicker, Tyler Bass, been here for a while. Last year, some swings. Like, do you talk to him about how, you know, how to go last year? How's it gone the last few years? You know, you're working on a lot of different things. He went through a rough stretch and then kind of bounced back in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, I think all kickers are going to do that. I mean, let's think about it, guys. There's only 32 of them, you know, where you're the wide receiver position around the league. Let's get into those numbers. Those are big numbers. You're talking about 32 players. There's going to be some ups and downs. Here's our deal. What we want to try to do is, obviously, we're not going to peak right now. We'd like to peak game one against the Ravens. From there, we want to maintain, and if it begins to dip, we want to be able to shoot them out of the dip quickly, whether that's a technique thing, whether that's always making sure. We want to have, on game day, he needs to have fresh leg, but at the same time has to be calloused enough through practice and put in some situations that he's ready to go. So I don't talk a lot about the past. I try to learn from the past, you know, and so if we do hit any of those markers, we got to be able to get them out of it quickly.
How much for those guys, for Tyler Bass and for Brad Robbins, Reed Ferguson, like those specialist positions, how much of coaching with them is more kind of what you just talked about, like the mental aspect of the game versus, like, I always wonder that about kickers and punters, like technique. Like, is that a lot of them on their own? Is there coaching elements to that too?
No, there's coaching elements to that. I mean, it's I don't know if you guys are golfers.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You want to talk golfing analogies? We are ready for that.
Well, what is your handicap?
Right now.
You're an 11?
I'm an 11, yeah.
She's 11, I'm a 13. So
okay,
we're
I'm
close.
With you. We could all go out and play.
Yeah,
scramble. I would say this, you know, a golfer, everybody has their own swing, right? My job is to learn the swing and getting to know the nuances of, hey, here's his good ball, here's his bad ball. Why is that? What's a little bit different? And then being able to coach that as we go. It's not one-stop shop. We got to, you know, you got to personalize the coaching because everybody's swing is different. Tyler Bass's swing is different than like when I had Cairo Santos in Chicago or Eddie Pinheiro. You know what I mean? Like, so you learn the player. You learn the player and go from there.
You know, you bring up the golfer analogy. I feel like I don't remember which Bills punter would have been a couple years ago talking about this exact thing where some punts you're hitting a 4-iron and some punts you're hitting the wedge. You know, like, is there different delivery in that way as well?
No, well, no question, especially kicking in Buffalo. I mean, if you're you're kicking in the north, those are tough assignments. What's the wind? Is it left to right, right to left? Where am I going to play this? What club am I going to use? And I think that's where punters are got to be really good. And maybe even, you know, the kicker, if I don't want to get it up as high to get up in the old jet stream there, I've got to hit a more piercing ball, you know, to get this thing through so it can hold. I think those are all things, manipulation of the foot and all that stuff that they do that really helps them.
And then, you know, like something else for a coach to think about, coordinator to think about, next year, new stadium, and there's not going to be a lot of data on the wind and how that's going to
– although supposedly there will be a lot less.
Listen, so, I know that's looking in the future, but just the idea of like all the things you're learning for this year, it's one last year in Highmark.
Well, yeah, honestly, I'm with you. Yeah. I haven't even thought about that.
I hadn't until right now either. So,
So let's put that on the back burner. Right. Okay, let's put that on the back burner.
Fair enough. You've been here in Buffalo since February. What have you learned about the area or the organization? Anything?
It's a special place. I know people say that, but it really is. I mean, the fan base is unbelievable. I've known that from playing, being on other organizations, and coming to Buffalo and play. You've always known that, but now when you're in it. It's really neat. People are so nice. I'm a Midwest guy, and I think when sometimes, you know, Midwest people, you think New York, you think New Yorkers. you know what I mean? But people are very Midwest nice, and it's I'm glad I'm here, and people are awesome.
Very good. Special teams coordinator Chris Tabor here from St. John Fisher. Thanks for the time, and best of luck this season.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, thank you. Jeremy and Joe, when we get back, Steve Tasker's going to pop in for a minute, and we'll chat a little more about this upcoming practice, the team where they are. Maxwell Harrison saw Bobby Babbage says they have a plan, but it is tough. You know, he's not going to be getting game speed reps. Hard to simulate that, but they do have a plan in place for rookie cornerback Maxwell Harrison with that sprained LCL. We'll get a break in our thanks to special teams coordinator Chris Tabor. I hadn't thought about the stadium thing, but like, there's a special
in confusion.
I'm just saying, if you're a special teams coordinator, all the stuff and all a punter, yeah. Brad Robbins, Tyler Bass. When Bass goes into that new stadium, he's got no data on what the wind's going to do, if there is wind. We'll get a break, and then Steve Tasker joins us here on WGR.